as you probably heard in our national news, after days of tense negotiations, Greek leaders have finally agreed to form a new coalition government. We have to wait a few more hours till we find out who is heading that unity government. But it does appear that Prime Minister George Papandreou will be stepping down. This is after a meeting between the Prime Minister, the leader of the main opposition party, and the Greek president. I tell you what, things are moving very quickly on this situation. When we spoke to Charlie Perkins from Perkins Portfolio Management on Friday to see if he could come in for a chat, we had no idea things were going to be quite this fast. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Ezra.
Boy, oh boy. This is it, I know you're here to talk about the finances, but I can't help but ask about the politics side of things. Watching on from the financial point of view, did this have to happen? Were people just pulling their hair out that he was going off to have a referendum with the people?
I think it's difficult to separate the economics and the politics at this stage. So I think it's necessary to talk about them both together.
And good on you for being our Greek political correspondent.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Thank you very much. It didn't necessarily have to happen, but once Papandreou called for a referendum, then I think his political goose was cooked, because I think he failed to understand the level of frustration that the Euro finance ministers had, given how long they'd worked together to come up with that October 26 accord. So when he spun around 24 hours later and said, we'll put that to the people, it very quickly got escalated, and we saw Merkel and Sarkozy say, well, this referendum will in fact be, do you want in or out of the euro? And really, his cards were marked from there, because the Greek public has been pretty consistent on about a 70% approval rating for the euro.
So, you know, in some ways he didn't need to do that, if that's what the people thought. But I guess, I mean, why did he do that? Why did he sort of say that to all the European leaders and, you know, face the world and go, yep, we're going to take it to a vote?
I think the broad answer here is political motivation. Mm. You know, he had a very, very thin grasp on power, 152 seats out of 300, so hardly a ringing mandate. So I think he felt that his best way forward was to check with the people. But the timing was flawed. To say that he was going to do that in January was a nonsense, considering that they run out of money in about Christmas week or so. So that was easily outflanked by the rest of Europe. So it was, a poorly calculated political gamble.
Yeah, that hasn't paid off at all for him. And if that had happened, just by some chance, and people had said, yep, we're out of the euro, what would have happened?
Well, a lot of variables there as to time frame and as to whether, saying they're out of the euro, we would also need to understand whether they were rejecting the deal that they'd been offered. There was a three-pronged deal that came out of the October 26 accord. And we can come back and expand on these if you like, but the mandatory 50% Greek debt write-down, the bank recapitalisation plan of Europe, and a boosting of the stability fund. If the Greeks voted no to all that, then I suspect they perhaps would have tried to find a government that would. And I think there does exist the will. The Greeks are very proud of their EU membership and their participation in the Euro bloc. So I suspect there still remains quite a lot of political will within the lawmakers there, in order to adhere to the rulings of the Euro bloc.
Greece, the first country, and I'm just thinking about the history of the Eurozone, were they the first ones to be this close to saying, no, we're going to take our bat and ball?
Not clear how close they have come to doing it. If it had gone to a referendum, yeah, I think it would have been defeated. There's been various... each country has had slightly different issues, although once they get large enough, it's all the same problem. We've definitely seen in some recent elections in Europe some of the more populist opposition parties gaining ground on the, you know, let's turn our back on the euro. So the The Irish would be a reasonable example of that. So, you know, we saw... this is the sort of thing that does change governments, and it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out from here.
Now, you highlighted a few points there. If we can just go back and revisit those. The Greek bond 50% write-down is voluntary. What do you think the key things are in that?
Well, voluntary is the key word. And so people will see word like haircut used, and it really just means a write-down. To ask bondholders to accept a 50% write-off in the value of their investment is sounds harsh, but the market's pricing in worse than that. So 50% in a lot of ways is not horrible, given the alternative. However, the one key fact here is that because it's voluntary, and what it means is there's a thing called you can purchase insurance on your bonds. It's called a credit default swap, and a lot of these holders of the Greek bonds have also gone and purchased insurance as the outlook has darkened. However, one of the key clauses in the insurance policy is that it's an involuntary. So anything that's accepted by the bondholders as being of their own free will probably negate the clause of the insurance. So in a lot of instances, bondholders would be wise to probably reject this and force an involuntary ruling and collect on their insurance as well. So it looks good, a 50% haircut, but time will tell as to how many actually take that up.
We were talking about superannuation earlier this morning, Charlie, and we were getting upset about much, much smaller losses than that. This is big.
This is big, and
I wouldn't want someone to tell me, you know, 50%, right, off you go.
That's true, but it wasn't marked at 100% yesterday. This is the point. I mean, this has been going for 18 months or so, and the sum of pain is the same. But but these things have been trading at about 30 cents in the dollar or 30 cents in the euro for quite some time. So the pain's already been taken for the superannuants and et cetera.
Now, one of the other issues, the bank recapitalisation plan looking very skinny. Is that, I mean, do we understand what that means, the general public?
It was one of the three points that that banks would undertake to recapitalise themselves in order to build a buffer and further be able to withstand some of the write downs as included in point one for a start. It's a moving target, so it's very, very difficult to put a number on it. As we all know now how interlinked those euro finances are and those euro debts are. It's a little bit like, you know, once you say a number, it's immediately wrong. So it's correct to try and focus on this, but we'd certainly like to see a lot more stringency applied to the recapitalisation process. Listeners might remember there was some stress tests conducted in Europe in June, only June of this year, and I think about five banks failed, and the press was rightly so fairly scathing and didn't really feel that they were particularly stressful or much of a test. As an example, Dexia Bank ranked 12th best out of 90 in those stress tests in June, and they've since gone bust. So it goes to show that, and what's now transpired is that their capitalisation treatment was, incorrect. It's hard to believe they're the only bank that have done that. So so bank recapitalisation needs a lot more than a couple of hundred billion that they're initially talking about.
Oh dear, these are big numbers, Charlie. But bringing all this back to Australia, and we know that the local share market's only just opened, you know, so it's a bit hard to get our heads around what's happening. But in the news this morning, they were saying the local share market's only expected to get a mild boost from these developments. What'll play out after, you know, what's your sense of what's going to happen with all of this?
Well, I think that the market got itself quite concerned in the lead up to the October 26 Accord. And when a plan was announced, We've seen a violent rally in global markets, in any risk market you like, be they equities, commodities, and etc. It certainly felt that some of that was justified, but the latter 5 to 10% was a little bit of overshoot. To use an analogy, it was a little bit like saying that those on the decks of the Titanic had now agreed it was an iceberg and resolved to try and miss it. So let's try and see the ship turn first before we get too excited. So we think there's quite a long way to go before Europe is resolved. It's probably 10 to 15% of the way through. So hence...
Long way then. So, sort of 6 to 12 months then.
Not necessarily by time, but more by proposals and concrete plans and governments of a sufficient political will and mandate to be able to see them through. They're the sort of things that we need. So markets had got themselves a little bit overexcited, in our opinion. We saw some profit taking into month end. Markets were supposed to open up down 0.5% this morning, with the news of Papandreou stepping down and a new unity government. Markets recovered about 0.5% to open up flat this morning. So we're very much in watch and wait. I heard the phrase used, benefit of the doubt, earlier on, and I think that was a good one. So we'll find out more on this unity government in terms of time frame and mandate, and we'll see how we go. But I think the market will quite rightly be a little cautious.
And, I mean, will this play out in terms of interest rates at all, or are they, quite separate?
I think it is intertwined. We've seen we got our rate cut on Cup Day. One thing that the RBA has been very good at doing is not having their hand on the tiller too many times. So when they do, it can generally be taken as a sign of intent. They may not cut rates again in December, but they released their statement of monetary policy late last week, and from out of that we can take the fact that they're keen on dropping rates another 25 to 50 basis points by first quarter 2012 is what we can take from that. So they're taking an awful lot of inputs in, the RBA, in order to make those decisions. Of course, domestic inflation data is first and foremost, but they need to be cognizant of the greater global macro forces. And as we continue to see uncertainty here, then it certainly aids them in their decision to cut rates.
Well, thank you for keeping your eye on the ball, Charlie. And can we get you back in before Christmas and just have a bit of a look at the year, the wonderful year in world finances and world politics as well?
We can do that. Should be a blockbuster.
I reckon it will. It could be moving very swiftly. That before the end of the year could be tomorrow at the rate we're going. Good on you. There's Charlie Perkins from Perkins Portfolio Management here in the Central West.